What's up, everyone? Welcome to another mini episode of Down Once More. Matt here, and this week I'm going to do a mini review of the national tour going on for The Cher Show, the jukebox musical about Cher's life with a book by Rick Ellis, who won a Tony for Jersey Boys. And then back half of the episode, got a few other things I'm going to throw in, as well as talk about future plans for the pod this month as we're heading into April. So let's get right into it. Like I said, The Cher Show is a jukebox musical. The book was written by Rick Ellis. The majority of the songs are songs from Cher's catalog. So how this musical came about is Rick Ellis in an interview said that Cher gave him a call and said that she wanted him to write a musical about her life. Now, Rick said they started talking about their lives and loss and things they'd gone through, and he realized, maybe I do have a little bit of something, we have a little bit of something in common that I could write the book for a story about the life of Cher. Now, my history with Cher in general is about the extent of if I could turn back time from the end of Deadpool 2, and then knowing, like, tangentially some of the songs, like Believe and the big Sonny and Cher song, I've Got You, Babe. And those were really the main songs that I knew. So I was going into this not really knowing what to expect, just looking to learn more about it. And so I did a little bit more history on the backstory of this, as you saw, partially because got slammed by some people in the comments from the Shrek the Musical National Tour review about the revamped one, for me not doing my research on the musical, which I did my research for the revamped tour, just not the original musical, because that's not what I was reviewing. My point when I do these reviews and when I do the movie reviews on the main podcast feed and everything like that, are kind of looking at it from a novice, a layperson who's going to these shows and the tour. And what I look for in a movie in general is, did I have fun? Were there things that grabbed me that I felt like I could connect with? How was the cast? How were the sets? How were the costumes? Things like that. Everything is about, did I enjoy it? If that's not what you're looking for, if you're looking for a real technical breakdown of, well, the altos were a bit pitchy in the ensemble, things like that, probably not going to get that here. If you want an in-depth breakdown of everything, you're also probably not going to get that here. However, I've got some history for the Cher, the musical show here. And if you want to have a good time, follow this podcast. I think we like to have fun with it. We do some interesting things, joke around a bit, don't take ourselves too seriously. And that's what I like listening to in a podcast. If it's not what you like listening to, not the show for you. So, like I said, the book for this was written by Rick Ellis. The majority of the songs in this jukebox musical, which, if you're not familiar with the term of a jukebox musical, it is, they're not songs written specifically for this show. It takes other people's songs or popular songs and throws them in here. Like a good example, Rock of Ages, Moulin Rouge, Jersey Boys, which, like I mentioned, Rick Ellis, who wrote the book for this, also worked on Jersey Boys and won a Tony for that. So, The Cher Show, it started, it had a New York City lab in 2017, not completely unsimilar to what In the Light is about to do. And this is my little plug, insert that I'm going to throw in there for In the Light, A Faustian Tale. One of my favorite kind of concept albums and musicals that is trying to get its shine with lyrics and book. Well, no, not book. Lyrics and music by Michael Mott, kind of one of his passion projects. The cast album features Jeremy Jordan, Celia Pfeiffer, Ciara Renee, Antonio Cipriano, and more, and it is fantastic. They are doing a workshop in New York City where you can get tickets to. It's suggested donation for them. And I think there's still tickets available. It's April 26th through 28th. Antonio Cipriano is going to be part of that cast. So I am super jealous that I cannot make it out there to it. I really want to make it happen. But finance, some other things going on right now, work, I just can't. It should be great. I'm in love with this musical, the album. I've talked about it on this podcast probably at least 10 times. It's probably annoying to those of you who have been following over the last 3 years since the beginning. But it is fantastic. If you have the opportunity, go check that out. Now back to the Cher show. It had a lab in New York City in 2017 and then premiered in Chicago of June 2018. And that's where it had its initial run. And then it moved over to Broadway in December of 2018. And then it ended its Broadway run in August of 2019. Since then, it did a UK tour starting in 2022. And then this US national tour that's going on right now started in 2023. So there's a lot of fun tidbits from this. The costumer for this musical, both the Broadway and the tour, is Bob Mackie, who was Cher's costumer. And actually, he's featured in the musical, not him himself, but he is played by Tyler Perrung in this and has some fantastic musical numbers where he's kind of the highlight and his costumes are the highlight. And I have to say, not being someone who didn't know a lot about Cher, like, I was raised conservative and religious. Cher was not on regular playlists. We listened to Stephen Curtis Chapman and Third Day, like Christian artists. That's what I was allowed to listen to growing up. Cher did not make that playlist. The costumes were absolutely fantastic, capturing some of Cher's iconic looks in this, with the ensemble's costumes too, just stunning. Some of the best costume work that I have seen in any musical. So an absolute like visual feast with this. Same with the set that they have for this national tour. And I'm assuming it was the same for the Broadway, where they have the big video screens, the vertical video screens, kind of narrower. And they use that to kind of transform the set, make it its own, put on some fantastic light shows during the performances. If you suffer epileptic seizures, do not go see the Cher show. There are lots of flashing lights and it is very colorful and it is fantastic, but fair warning. And I'm not going to go like fully break down every aspect of the show, but the main premise, which I actually really enjoyed how it was told, because I didn't know, like I said, I didn't know many Cher songs besides as I was listening there. I'm like, I knew more of these songs than I thought, but I didn't know the history. So there are three versions of Cher that tell the story of this musical. There's Babe, who is the younger version of Cher, who they say kind of the bright-eyed kid when she's starting out in her career. And it literally starts with her as a kid. And that's played by Ella Perez, who just has an insanely powerful voice for how young she is. And her stage presence was fantastic. Then the next phase of Cher, and so that's like in the 50s and 60s, the Babe version, which I feel like I'm talking about the movie about the pig that herds sheep, but I'm not. I'm talking about the young Cher. And then the next stage is Lady, who is kind of the glam pop star version of Cher, where she has some more confidence. Like the Babe version is facing a lot more of that self-doubt and nervousness that Cher went through in her life. And then Lady is more when she starts having more confidence, when the Sonny and Cher show starts, and then when she eventually leaves Sonny after finding out some shady things that he was doing. And so that's played by Catherine Ariel. I apologize if I'm butchering any of these names. Some of these have some unique last names, so I'm doing my best. Catherine did a fantastic job. Vocally, I feel like her vocal performances were my favorite of the show. Like, her voice was so beautiful, so powerful. Loved it. And then finally, you have the final form of Cher, at least in the show, and that's the star version. And that was played by Morgan Scott, who opens up the musical in one of Cher's iconic hewn costumes and singing If I Could Turn Back Time. And so that's the intro we got. It's a huge dance number with the ensemble and then kicks off. This show is Cher talking to the audience, primarily the star version of Cher, so the closest to the current version of Cher, talking to the audience and telling the story of her life and interacting with the younger versions of herself. And they almost work as kind of the voices in the back of her head, giving more context of some of these stages. So you get star, so Morgan Scott kicking off the show, as a star version of Cher, and then going back to the beginning when Cher is a child. And then you see the transition of how she first found out she wanted to become a star, some rough home life things she was dealing with. And that's when we get like talk about being called a half breed because of her mixed heritage and everything that she went through then. And then we get meeting Sonny Bono, who is played by Lorenzo Pugliese. And I apologize, I'm sure I butchered that name, who does an absolutely fantastic job, Sonny Bono. And I watched interviews with him. His voice, not at all like Sonny Bono's regularly, but he does a great Sonny impression, which makes sense because he played SpongeBob on the national tour of SpongeBob. And weirdly, this is something I did not know until I started doing some research and listening to some older things. Sonny Bono and SpongeBob, very similar voices. So don't come at me if you're a big Sonny fan. I'm innocent. But Lorenzo did a fantastic job. And I'm going to jump back to what I was saying about the costumes. The costumes for everyone, so great in this. There are so many quick changes. You see so many different looks in this. It is fantastic. I cannot harp on that enough. The costuming of this show and this production, fantastic. So, like I said, we're going through all the stages of Cher's life. So we see when she meets Sonny, when she starts performing, when the Sonny and Cher show is going on, when she leaves and starts her own show. And that's kind of when she transforms to the star version in the musical. And so she has the more of that confidence and kind of self-assurance and doing her own thing. Because one thing that is a key component of this is all the self-doubt and kind of the just nerves and worrying about what other people would think that Cher faced in her life. And I'm going to go out on a limb. Like, I don't know how 100% accurate. It's obviously going to be kind of biased towards Cher since she was the one who wanted this musical to be written and was a producer of it. And Rick Ellis did say that when he was doing research, his main source, he went directly to the source. He went to Cher and he went to people who worked with her. So it's probably fairly accurate. Obviously, in jukebox musicals and musicals in general, you're going to kind of shift things to how you want them to be. But we go through her, basically her whole career, when she leaves the Sonny and Cher show to start after she finds out just how Sonny's kind of screwed her over. Like the company with her name is owned completely by Sonny and the lawyers. She has 0% stake in it. And then she goes and starts her own show. It fails. She goes to Broadway. Then her turns in acting and how that goes. And then finally, how she becomes kind of the crescendo, the whole finale is when Believe kind of took off and kind of kickstarted her popularity again after everything she went to, after Sonny's death and just everything. And so I was really impressed with the show. I thought, like I said, visually one of the more stunning shows I've ever seen. As someone who didn't know a lot of Cher's catalog, I really enjoyed hearing more of these songs. We also get songs from some other artists. So it explores her relationship with George Allman and kind of some of the rocky parts with that. And there, she has a child with him too. And they have a kid together. And so we get Midnight Rider and Ramblin' Man. And so we get those numbers incorporated into the show. And so it was really great. As far as jukebox musicals go, I liked the setup. I liked the format of the different Chers interacting with each other and also interacting with the audience and telling the story. And I thought it was done really well. And I will say, like I said, as someone who wasn't familiar with much of Cher's work, two of the songs that I really like, they got added to my playlist shortly after the show were Just Like Jesse James. And then Song for the Lonely, which Song for the Lonely closes out the first act and is sung by all three versions of Cher, Star, Lady, and Babe. And it was so good. And these three actresses sound so amazing together. So it was just, I can't say enough good things about it. Is it a perfect show? No, but you will have a great time. It goes by quickly. Like, it's almost a 3-hour show, but you're having a good time throughout. The music is catchy. The staging is catchy. The, like I said, the visuals, the costuming, the lights, the screens, everything is so good. Highly recommend you check out the show if you have an opportunity on tour. I'm not sure how many stops they have left. But, oh, and I don't remember if I hit on this, so apologies if I'm repeating myself. And you know me, I don't cut anything out of these because I want to keep it authentic and real. But the costumer for this is Bob Mackey. And he was, he was Cher's costumer in real life too. The other reason I'm confused in this, and I can't remember if I said it or not, is because this is my second time recording it. I recorded it, and then I went to go make soup. It's like 70 degrees outside, but I had kale, so I'm making Zuppa Toscana from Olive Garden, mimicking it. And I was thinking about it more, and I'm like, I think I left out things, and I don't like how that recording went. So I did it again. So here we are. But if you have the opportunity, go see the Cher show. It's a fantastic production, fantastic talent across the board on there. So Cher show, go see it. Now, extra bonus things. Last week's episode, if you watched till the end, or even if you just listened, you might have gotten a little bit of a hint that I was slightly intoxicated at the end. So probably not going to do that again. Rough next day. But if you remember right, Brad took advantage of me in my state and got me to agree to do Spamalot, the musical. So we will be reviewing Spamalot on here. It probably will not be next week. As Brad said, we're going to do that in 2 weeks. Timing, things going on, it might be 2 weeks from now. So Spamalot will happen within the course of a month. So be watching for that. There's not an official recorded version. There are versions on YouTube and Vimeo and stuff like that. And you can listen to that album of it if you just want to hear the songs. So fair warning, that will be coming down the pipe. I'm also seeing the national tour of Mean Girls on Sunday after this episode releases. And so I will be doing a review of that on here at some point, depending on how the episodes fall. That will be coming sometime after that. And then, as if you've been following for a while, you're probably familiar how these mini episodes go, is it's basically just highlights of things that jumped out to me during the week before recording this. So I mentioned it at the end of last week's episode. I did see Fall Out Boy in concert this past week, and it was a great show overall. So the openers were Carr, who wasn't familiar with, she did decent, Hot Mulligan, who I started listening to before the show, and I vibe with them. Great. Like, I like the kind of like screamo pop punk edge and combo. Like, Emery was one of my favorites. Like, that emo vibe, they really, of the 2000s, they just really encapsulated it for me. Hot Mulligan, I really enjoyed. Jimmy Eat World, just so talented and put on a great show. They were just very talented performers. They're not ones that's interacting with the crowd and making jokes like some people I've went to. So, like, when I think of some of the best shows I've gone to have been where the band has so much energy and stage presence, and they make you feel like you're part of the show too. So, usually you don't get that in arena tours. So, like, I get it. So I always prefer going to a smaller venue. So All Time Low is still one of the best shows that sticks with me, because when I went to them probably like 10 years ago now, or probably closer to 12, and it was in a smaller venue, just the energy, the banter between the bandmates in between, and just you felt like you were just comfortable and watching friends perform, and it makes you feel like you have a great time. And that's how I felt with Fall Out Boy. They didn't do a ton of fan interaction back and forth, but their energy on stage, especially Pete Wentz and Patrick Stump, was so good. At one point, Pete Wentz has a bass guitar that doubles as a flamethrower during The Phoenix and My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark, and it was fantastic. It was their staging and pyro and everything else they had going on. They had a curtain behind the drummer that every few songs would open up, and there'd be like a whole new set behind it with, there was a giant inflatable dachshund head at one point. There's a man in a bunny suit. There was all sorts of random trippy stuff that was just so fun, and it was such a great time. And they balanced it perfectly because it was a tour for their newer album that released last year, I believe. And So they played probably five songs off the new album, but then they played almost all the hits from their old stuff. You get Dance Dance, you get Sugar We're Going Down, you get Grand Theft Auto, Where's Your Boy, which is maybe my favorite Fall Out Boy song. And then you get Saturday, you get Uma Thurman, like all the hits, almost all the ones you want to see. I won't say all, because I really miss Dead on Arrival. Dead on Arrival was one of my first introductions to Fall Out Boy from, I forget if it was Guitar Hero or Rock Band was on those, and I rocked the shit out of that song. And so I was kind of bummed that we didn't get that live, but it was a great time. It's a great tour. Like, with everything that they had going on, the supplemental things of it, besides just the vocals and the music, which they sound just as good as they did on the album, and just with that energy cranked up to 11. And it just was such a great experience and such a great show. So if you have the opportunity to go see Fall Out Boy on this tour, highly recommend you do it. Games We Play is opening for them in some of the tour dates instead of Car. And I really enjoy Games We Play. I was bummed they weren't here. Right now, one of my favorite songs is Round and Round by Games We Play, which is from their 2022 album. Sorry, 2024 album. It just came out a few months ago. I don't know why I said 2022. 2022 was my first introduction to them. Maybe it was even 2023, and that was I Hope You're Happy, which is a great song. But I Hope You're Happy, and then Round and Round, so good by Games We Play. If you haven't heard of them, go check them out. And I don't really have anything else for this episode. It's a mini episode. These are supposed to be 15 to 30 minutes. Thank you all for listening, following, subscribing, supporting our YouTube. I haven't said anything because I was hoping it would get over 50, because I was expecting, honestly, I was expecting us to lose people with the last episode with the Drunken Matilda review. But so far, that hasn't been the case, and our YouTube is officially sitting at 50 subscribers, which has been a goal of mine for a while. So thank you, everyone who's subscribing. Thank you to all the new followers here. Hopefully you enjoy the show. Hopefully you're finding enough of the old past stuff to get you caught up. We're getting closer to 100 episodes. I think we'll hit it within the next few months. So we're in year 3, constantly changing, looking for new things to do. So if you have suggestions, things you want us to talk about, things you want us to rank, rate, do drafts of random things, let us know in the comments. DM me on Instagram. I like chatting with people. I'll interact with you on there in the comments. I'll usually interact unless it's just super negative. Then sometimes for my own mental health, I'm just like, you know what? It's not worth responding to. So other times I will, because there's some people, like, I don't expect everyone to like everything I say. People have different opinions and I respect that. So sometimes I will get on there and I will explain my point of view. If there's points that I disagree with, I might try to explain it. I don't expect to change anyone's minds. I just want people to clearly know where I'm coming from, why I do this. I do this because I enjoy doing it. I do it because I enjoy music. I enjoy musicals. I enjoy movies. I enjoy the theater and the live experience. And I enjoy talking probably too much. So I'm going to sign off now. Thank you all for listening. You rock. Tell your friends about it. Get us more subscribers. My goal, my long-term goal is to keep growing and growing and growing. This is the talking a lot that I mentioned, that I talk too much. But I want to hit 100 subscribers. So I want to hit 100 subscribers. No, I was going to say by my birthday, but that's way too ambitious. By the end of 2024, let's get to 100 subscribers. I think it's doable. Thank you all. Have a great week. We got some holidays coming up at some point eventually. Easter just happened, and which we celebrated by drunkenly ranting about zombie Jesus for 15 minutes at the end of the last podcast. So thank you all. Love you all. Have a great week. Don't forget to go down once more. Later.